Today on Maine Calling, prefabricated homes, they are not what they used to be. When you think of a prefabricated home, do you think of a small, plain, low-quality house? Well, think again. Prefab homes today can be cottage-style or super modern, and everything in between. Most new prefab houses are energy efficient, plus many can be built quicker and at lower cost than traditional housing. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will learn about some of the prefab housing being built right now here in Maine. Most commonly, wall panels or rooms are built in a factory and then brought on site for assembly. Creative versions involved shipping containers or 3D printing. This program is part of our series, The Cost of Living, Maine's Housing Crisis. Plus, post-election day takeaways. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by contributing listeners and support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today we are learning about prefabricated or modular homes and how these home building approaches might be a way to create more affordable housing in Maine. This program is part of our series, The Cost of Living, Maine's Housing Crisis. Joining us to talk about the prefab trend, Carolyn Pryor, who is president and founder of Zero Energy Homes, Ryan McCackern, who is owner of Maker Construction, and Chad Walton, CEO of Snap Space Solutions. We invite you to join the conversation. Have you ever considered having a prefab home? Have you seen some of the housing built from shipping containers? Are you curious about some of the other new ways of constructing a home? You can send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. But before we talk with our panelists, we're going to get a quick update on how Election Day went in Maine. First up, Maine Secretary of State Shenna Bellows. Thank you so much for calling in, Secretary Bellows.
Good morning. What a great day for democracy yesterday. We saw wonderful voter turnout all across the state.
That's what I was going to ask. Do you have numbers? How was voter turnout?
So we are just still getting those results back from the clerks, and we won't have official numbers until we report it to the governor. But what we do know is that the early returns show that we saw strong turnout in Washington County and cities like Bath and Biddeford that had local races. We saw turnout at over 60% in those municipalities as a percentage of registered voters. Now, statewide in 2023, 43.2% of registered voters cast ballots. This year, it was certainly higher. We won't know exactly how much higher, but definitely in the 40s, which is exciting.
And do we have a sense of how many votes were before Election Day?
So over 146,000 absentee ballots were requested before Election Day. That's out of approximately 900,000 voters. So again, we saw very high absentee voter turnout as compared to the last referendum-only election and high Election Day turnout yesterday as well. So really, clearly, Maine voters have confidence in our elections and turned up to vote in an off year. And there was a lot of excitement at the polls yesterday. It was really great.
Secretary Bellows, how did things go at the polls? Were there any glitches or concerns that you need to address for future elections?
No, it was a really safe and secure election, as it so often is. You know, nationally, certainly in New Jersey, there were bomb threats that led to some polling place closures. There were some cybersecurity attacks in other states. Now, here in Maine, of course, in 2024, we saw swatting of schools that were co-located with polling locations, and our clerks and local law enforcement acted perfectly. We had trained for that, and voting was uninterrupted. So as we plan for future elections, we'll certainly take lessons learned from other states and what they saw yesterday and apply those moving forward.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Secretary of State Shenna Bellows. Now we're going to catch up with Kevin Miller, Maine Public's State House correspondent. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Jen. How are you?
I'm great. Here in Maine, in the end, neither referendum question was even close. Voters said no to question one, which would have altered Maine's election laws, and said yes to a new red flag law, both by wide margins. Kevin, what are some of the takeaways from these results? Are voters sending a message?
Yeah, these were wide margins. We're talking more than 25% spreads on both ballot initiatives. I think the clearest takeaway from question one is that Maine voters really like absentee voting. The campaign behind question one had tried to focus on the voter ID provisions, but the reality is that they also proposed a slew of these changes to absentee balloting, and the opposition really seized on those changes with significant success, obviously. On question two, the red flag gun law, that appears at least to be in part a response to the Lewiston mass shootings back in 2023. Yes, Maine had a yellow flag law at the time, but it wasn't used. That law is still on the books. So we'll now have these two gun confiscation laws for people who pose a threat, but it's clear that voters wanted another option.
Kevin, a group representing some law enforcement groups believes that the red flag law undermines constitutional rights. So do you anticipate a court challenge?
Yeah, I'd say that that's always a possibility. Many of the red flag laws in other states have been challenged in court on constitutional grounds, but multiple courts have also upheld those laws. But yeah, law enforcement groups raise those concerns about the constitutionality of the law, both during the campaign and then after question two's victory last night. You know, in a statement just this morning, the Maine Law Enforcement Coalition, which includes most of the major law enforcement groups in the state, they called on the legislature to closely monitor how the law is rolled out and to address any potential unintended consequences that arise.
Nationally, we saw Bowdoin alumni Zohran Mamdani elected mayor of New York City. Democrats elected governors in New Jersey and Virginia, and Prop 50, which was that redistricting measure, win big in California. Is all of this an indication of what might happen in next year's midterm elections?
Yeah, well, that's the big question, right? I mean, Democrats in Maine and nationally are certainly hoping to keep the momentum going into next year. But a referendum election in an off-year election is very different from what we'll see here in Maine next year, when voters will be choosing our next governor. They'll be choosing all 186 seats in the legislature, and they'll also be deciding whether to send Republican Senator Susan Collins back to D.C. You know, I think it's clear from the results in Maine and nationally that Democrats were motivated and energized to vote. That's really not a surprise, given everything that's happening. But I guess the question is, can they keep it up? You know, the general election is still a year away. And look at everything that's happened during the past 10 months alone since President Trump took office again. So kind of who knows where things will stand politically, economically, and socially in a year.
Well, Kevin, thank you so much for joining us. Kevin Miller, political reporter for Maine Public. Now we're going to turn to our topic of the day, which is prefab homes, what they are, how they're made, and how they might help with Maine's affordable housing shortage. Thank you all for being with us. Caroline, I'm going to start with you. Back in the 1990s, back 100 years ago, people could order household items and clothing from the Sears catalog. They could also order kit houses. Many of those are still standing today. Now, these aren't exactly prefab houses, but it was an early example of this idea of having a home planned out and easily assembled, right?
Yes. Yes. It's an old-fashioned idea. I think that the time may be coming back again. And we have an option in our building suite, which is kind of like a kit that we can talk about during the show today. So great to be here.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. I think a lot of people have an idea in their head of what a prefab home looks like, what it feels like to be inside of it. But they would be wrong, right?
Well, there are some misconceptions. We just built our first offsite home in Searsport, Maine, and it is beautiful. And if someone didn't tell you how it was assembled, you would think it was like any other high quality, well-built home.
Okay, Ryan, you're on the hands-on side of things. Tell us what you do to actually put together a prefab or modular home. And is there a difference between those terms?
There is a difference. I mean, modular, generally speaking, is a house that's completely assembled into, we'd say boxes in the industry, but the finishes would be done. A lot of the finishes would be done, the drywall, the kitchen installed, that kind of stuff. Prefab can be that, but it can also be, panelization, where it's just wall packages being delivered and or wall packages, ceiling packages, roof packages. So I think prefab is more all-encompassing than just saying modular, but and then there's also manufactured houses. So there's a little bit of confusion amongst all of them. And then there's mobile homes also. So
Yeah,
yeah.
and we've done another program about mobile homes and manufactured homes, and but what we're talking about today is really sort of, though, even though it is a little bit back to the future, like we were talking about with Caroline about how maybe this is a throwback to Sears Kit Homes in a way. In a big way, it's not, right? I mean, we're talking about homes in which major components are made in a factory, and they're made under in conditions in which, they're climate controlled, and you can put together whole walls or whole rooms and then move those to the site, correct? I mean, this is, I think for people who haven't been following this, it's kind of a lot to get your head around.
Yeah, it's there really is that misconception, right? Like you have to buy these specific boxes and that kind of stuff. The largest manufacturer in the state of Maine is a very, very custom home builder. Every home that goes through their facility is in itself different. And people, like Caroline said, people don't realize often when you get inside a modular home that's done and finished that it's even a modular home, that it came out of a factory. But obviously, yeah, they can be, they're not what they were 30 years ago. They can be very complex. You can get, a lot of people don't think that you can get, the open concepts out of a modular house because you need all the walls and stuff to ship these boxes and components, but that's not at all the case. I give the example, back about 7 or 8 years ago, we put a 70-foot long steel beam down the center of one box to completely open up the span between boxes. So, what you can do in modular is, almost as much as you can do in site-built homes these days.
Yeah, and Caroline, of course, this is part of our series, which looks at Maine's housing crisis, and this is a potential solution, or one of the many potential solutions. Caroline, what are the benefits of a modular home? I know that they are not necessarily, but can be less expensive, but also much quicker to build, correct?
Yes. Building off-site, and we're doing two forms of off-site construction right now. One is panelized and the other is modular. But the benefits are a decrease in time, efficiency. All of your workers, your tools, your materials are gathered in one place. There's just a tremendous amount there. So it's really all about for zero energy homes is trying to get the price point down to where it's more accessible and more affordable while keeping really high quality construction standards.
And
And
your
if I
company's
could.
called Zero Energy Homes, costing less to live in, right?
Yes, thank you. The third piece is really doing a high performance home so that the residents, home buyers will have very low or no utility costs.
Amazing. Chad, I want to bring you into the conversation. You are involved with an interesting and creative side to this idea of prefab housing. Tell us how you got started with using shipping containers to build homes.
Well, it's taken a few years for it to catch on. I started back in 2005 when Hurricane Katrina wiped out New Orleans, and FEMA put everyone in the mobile homes that they had such problems with. and that when the next hurricane comes, they're going to have to evacuate them, you know, to get them out of it. Nobody wants to be in a mobile home during a hurricane or a tornado. So we had several shipping containers in a driveway that we were using for storage. And we had also used them to expand our manufacturing space at the time. And it worked so well that it was a no-brainer to start building homes out of them. And you don't need to worry about leaving your home during a hurricane or a tornado in a shipping container, because it can never come apart. Unlike anything that's stick built, you know, when it goes together in pieces, it can come apart in pieces. But with the shipping container, it's completely welded, every seam on it, so it can't be torn apart, which is pretty cool.
How do you procure your shipping containers? Where do they come from?
Oh, we buy them from all over the world. We buy them sometimes out of Amsterdam, sometimes out of Iceland, but most of them we get out of the Port of New Jersey or out of Montreal. That's where we get for the northern states. And then in the southern states, we buy them out of Jacksonville or Charleston, South Carolina.
And I'm wondering, do you see this as a potential solution for providing affordable housing?
Oh, yes. We've worked with state of Florida, state of Maine. We're working on one for Vermont right now, for Burlington, Vermont, projects for affordable housing. The structure being all there, and we can buy them already pre-insulated, factory insulated, so the interior finish is already on them as well. So it helps to get the cost down. Plus that speeds up the time to build it. And when you speed that up, you're cutting out steps. And when you cut out steps, you cut out costs.
Yeah. And I've seen some pictures. We're not just talking about one box, right? I mean, you put them together almost like Legos and cut out windows and provide stairs. I mean, this is not something that's little necessarily.
No. We can build them as small as 160 square feet, or we can build them multiple stories and open them wide open inside. Yeah, we do that quite often.
I'm thinking, Caroline, that it's kind of exciting what all of you are doing. Is this a community that talks to each other and gets fired up by each other's ideas?
The collaboration is a key part of it for us. And I think with the housing crisis that we have, and also I would say a climate and energy crisis, I think people are getting jazzed up and talking to each other more. No one can do this on their own. There are so many things that go into home building and home ownership and affordability and good climate science that people really, my opinion is people really have to collaborate. And that's been a hallmark of our business.
Ryan, is there a waiting list? Are there, if someone is listening to the program today and thinking, I'm going to do this, I want to go this direction with the home that I want to build. I'm guessing that you all are in high demand.
It's a funny time right now, because our normal market outside of what we're doing with Zero Energy Homes is a medium to higher end modular, and that seems to have slowed down a little bit. Obviously, we know from the state's data that, you know, we have a substantial need for housing. So at the same time, Caroline's business is starting up, so we're gaining traction there. Now is a good time to get in, because we are in such early stages that the backlog is still kind of proving itself. You know, that's a little bit of a push to sell to some degree, but it really is, like, it's happening very fast. But right now we're still kind of building things out, or Zero Energy Homes is still kind of building things out. So
Caroline.
Yes, we had the open houses for the Searsport home in August. And as a result of that, we brought a couple hundred people through in tours. And we
had the Searsport house, I mean, it was kind of a spec house that you all built.
Yes, we called it our demonstration house. So it's two bedrooms, one bath on one floor, 896 square feet with opportunity to finish off the second floor. And we've sold a number since then. And I'll just say we do have an express interest form on our website if anybody would like to talk with us and get an estimate.
All right. Well, we are talking about prefab homes today on Maine Calling. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. There are many kinds of prefab homes, and they can be adapted to a wide range of needs and settings. We're learning about this category of housing and its potential in Maine. With me, Ryan McCachran, who is owner of Maker Construction, Chad Walton, CEO of SnapSpace Solutions, and Caroline Pryor, president and founder of Zero Energy Homes. Share your comments and questions. Have you ever lived or built a modular home? Send an email to talk@mainpublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. A quick email here. This is from Nate. Nate writes, I work right by the new apartment and condo complex on Douglas Street in Portland, and it has been incredible watching the modular condos go up in a matter of hours. If I hadn't watched trucks drive entire sections in, I would have never known they were not traditionally constructed either. So thanks for that, Nate. Calling in now, Alan Gibson, who is principal of Go Logic in Belfast. Thanks so much for calling in, Alan.
Hi, Jennifer.
Tell us what your approach is to prefab home building.
Well, we're a general contractor design build firm based in Belfast, and we do panelized construction, which Ryan mentioned earlier. Instead of building big boxes that are highly finished, we do wall, floor, and roof panels, and we assemble those on site to create a complete, like, weathertight, airtight shell. And then we'll either finish the rest of the house, or a local general contractor will do that.
You know, I'm wondering why you think there's a newfound sort of spate of attention to making homes in this way. Has there been an evolution that's made it better than it used to be?
Well, a little history. The building industry has been talking about moving to a manufacturing model for a long time. It's the only major industry that hasn't done so. And as a consequence, the building industry, because it hasn't done that, has actually seen its productivity drop over time compared to other major industries. So there are big challenges to doing that. It's done a bit more that way in other countries, but the thing about, if you think about manufacturing, you think about a product that has a lot of pieces stamped out, you assemble them, put it in a box, and ship it to a store where it goes on a shelf. And even automobiles, Henry Ford figured that out over 100 years ago, how to do an assembly line and bring the cost of vehicles down so his workers could afford them. And in housing, there are a bunch of challenges to doing that. Houses are really big. They're really heavy. They're really awkward to move around. And it takes kind of a realignment of the whole industry to go this way. So I think only about 3% of houses in the country are delivered prefab in some way. So how do we move in that direction? Well, that's a big question. I think we've been talking about the benefits of it. For us, we're seeing big benefits in quality of the product. That's the main thing. And we build to a very high energy standard, the passive house standard. And so we can do a lot of the additional work you need to do on a high-performance home in our shop space at much in lower cost, and it avoids a lot of extra time spent on site. So that's a big advantage.
Yeah. Well, Alan, thanks so much for calling in and sharing your insights. Alan Gibson is with Go Logic. Now calling in is Amy Nucci, who is Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity of Maine. Thanks for calling in, Amy.
Thank you for having me.
I understand Habitat for Humanity is helping to build modular homes in Maine. Tell us what you're doing and how it's different than how you used to do things.
Sure. So there are about 8 Habitat for Humanity affiliates working in Maine. And I would say about half of those have incorporated modular construction into their programs. And a lot of them aren't losing the Habitat model that you envision of volunteers working together and raising the wall. What's happening is the modular home is being delivered on site. The 2 kind of boxes are being set, and you're getting a weathertight shell that then the Habitat volunteers work together to finish. They do the flooring, the painting, the trim work, the exterior doors and decks, the exterior stairs and ramps and decks.
Hmm. So we really as a way that Habitat will be moving even more so in the future?
I think every habitat in Maine and the country is really trying to meet the housing crisis that we're in. And modular construction helps compress the timeline and help us build more homes faster. So I think we'll continue to see habitats moving in this direction.
Thank you so much, Amy. Amy Nucci with Habitat for Humanity of Maine. On the line with us now is Susan McKay, who is Chief Sustainable Materials Officer with the University of Maine, the Advanced Structures and Composite Center. Thanks for joining us, Susan.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
UMaine made headlines with this 3D printed house unveiled a few years ago. Where are we with that whole project today? I understand there was a planned neighborhood. Has that happened?
It hasn't happened yet. We've raised some of the money. We're working with Penquist and Maine Housing on that. So it's a public-private partnership. So the public part is, you know, sitting it, when the government reopens, we fully intend to restart the part of the project we're doing here at the lab, which is doing the next generation housing design and printing based on what we did with the biohome.
And you talk about the biohome, but that was a couple years ago. What's happening with the research and materials being used for future projects?
So we've been doing quite a bit of research in the, you know, the biohome was what we call a moonshot. So it was really a way to raise awareness of the potential to use both this approach. You know, people had been 3D printing houses, but in a very specific way, concrete homes, done outdoors, and so we wanted to demonstrate another way to utilize what we call digital construction. And so the biohome was quite successful. We drew a lot of attention. We engaged a lot of stakeholders in the space. And since then, we've been doing research on all three parts. We've been improving the equipment. We've been improving the materials. And we've been improving the design. We've done multiple prints of different subcomponents of a house, showing how we can integrate wiring and plumbing into the walls through the print process. It's we have a very active research program here, and then we are building our Factory of the Future with an entire research bay dedicated to printed housing research.
Wow. Well, thank you for calling in, Susan McKay with UMaine's Advanced Structures and Composite Center. So many of you calling in. We'll start with Larry, who's calling from near Deer Isle. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me. Great program. Each of the people in the program and the companies have been calling. I actually looked at as someone who was going to buy an existing home or go modular. Go with some type of prefabricated home. And my experience was that our household income was slightly higher than would allow us to apply for such a house as like in Searsport, which is a great home. But in the process of looking at this option, what I ran into, at least in down east Maine and three counties, was the cost of developing a site, if it wasn't already developed, or in a divisional subdivision like the house in Searsport, which had existed for some time, was that that cost was very prohibitive as opposed to buying an existing home. And the other thing was that, because I was so interested in this as a former contractor myself, I thought about, well, according to the Maine government, 61% of our population lives in rural areas. They're not in Portland or Augusta or Waterville, et cetera. And so it's very important for affordable housing. I'm not sure that those issues of affordable development addresses that 60% of the state population. And I'm interested how you're guests and others might view their ability to deliver affordable housing for, let's say, people that are earning less than $70,000 a year in rural areas.
Yeah, Larry, good points. And Ryan, I saw you nodding while he was talking. Is this a challenge you've encountered?
Yeah, I've throughout my tenure in the offsite construction industry, prefab industry, it's really been on the forefront of my mind. Is I'm a process person, like from a manufacturing perspective, right? So I like to solve problems. I like to improve things, make things more efficient, thereby reducing the cost. That's always been my end goal. Has been that That being said, I completely agree. A lot of the times, the cost hurdles really have more to do with the site issues, restrictions. So is there ledge on site, existing utilities or not, putting a well in, septic foundation type is a big part of that equation. Those are all things. So in our partnership with Zero Energy Homes, those are the things that we're working on in addition to the actual modular portion. So we're constantly evaluating and looking for customers that will challenge the idea of a foundation versus a slab on grade. Actually, Alan Gibson's company is a prime example of that. A lot of the stuff they do is slab on grade foundation. So there's not a bunch of additional cost with excavation and that kind of stuff on site. So we are certainly looking at it more from more than, you know, just the manufactured portion of the home. And that's, you know, my business also. I'm a general contractor. So one of the unique things about my business is we do most of the work ourselves. So we're not just general contracting and marking up all of the additional, which is fine. I understand there's different business models, but we do all our own concrete foundations, all our own earthwork, and all our own finish work, everything is with the exception of the mechanical stuff that we're not licensed to do. So,
yeah. And Chad, you were nodding too. This is the biggest challenge for you all.
Well, one of the reasons I looked at this is I came from one of my other companies. We stick built houses and panelized built houses and met federal tax credit level of energy with them, met efficiency Maine. We met all those standards. And with the shipping containers, they only need to be supported on the four corners. So we don't need to do like what we had to do for the homes that we build. We had to go in and excavate the site, put your gravel foundation down, the pour slab or put the foundation in. With these, it only needs to be supported on the four corners. So we save many yards of concrete plus all the gravel to raise the grade and everything. And it also can be set on land that you know, that would cost a lot to get it ready to put a regular foundation, a regular slab on. We don't have to do any of that work. So you just have to bring your utilities in your driveway.
Larry, thank you for your question. A couple emails here from, this one's from Polly. We built a modular tech house in the 1970s. It was post and beam, so you could move room walls. It came on a truck and 8-foot panels they put together on site and then would lift up the whole side at once. My husband and I made a model with a cardboard box so we could get optimum sun in the winter. We loved it. And then an email from Carl with a different perspective. I purchased my current home in 2023. It was a free prefabricated home built in 2005 in central Pennsylvania and shipped to central Maine. My living room light circuit breaker would go through tripping spells. Upon inspection of the light switch box, the Romex wire had been pulled very tight into the box. It appears traveling down the highway from Pennsylvania. The taut wire got more skin to the verge of shorting. 20 years later, it did start to short. I'm glad I was home and in the room. Otherwise, I suspect my house would have burned down. Not everything is rosy with prefabricated houses. So does anyone want to address Carl's experience?
I would say not everything is rosy with any type of construction all the time, right? Yeah, I mean, there's certain standards with everything. I think that's one of the things that we're focusing on with Zero Energy Homes is on one side of the equation, I'm a manufacturing process person, but on the other side of the equation, I love like all wood furniture and really high level craftsmanship stuff. So we're really trying to focus on the quality of the workmanship, you know, as much as anything.
And I'm guessing here, Carl's talking about a home that was shipped from Pennsylvania, but all of you are here in Maine. And the whole point is that you are here in Maine and close by. I want to go an email from Harriet. I am curious what Caroline said about little or no utilities. Can she say more about that?
Yeah, thank you. Great question. So a net zero energy home needs three things. One is a very tight thermal envelope to keep your heat in and the cool air in the summer. You need a way to generate your electricity, which is in our houses through a solar array, and you need efficient mechanical systems. The Searsport house and our homes are designed so that the solar will provide more than enough heat and utility, heat and electric for the home's generation throughout the year. So it's actually estimated to be net energy positive. So the panels will be creating more energy than the home is estimated to use. So you'll just have your in Searsport, I think the 30, it's a $30 a month delivery fee is about all you should have if you live within your means.
Amazing. Well, we are talking about prefabricated homes and the great variety of them on Maine Calling as a possible solution to Maine's housing crisis. We're going to take another quick break and we'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. We are talking about the potential for prefab housing to be used and more in Maine and how it might possibly be one of the solutions to Maine's housing crisis. Joining us, Chad Walton with Snap Space Solutions, Caroline Pryor with Zero Energy Homes, and Ryan McCachran with Maker Construction. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566, or if you're quick, you can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. We're going to go to Kathleen calling from Bucksport. Hi, Kathleen, go ahead.
Hi, yes. Love the idea of modular prefab and especially helping housing issues in Maine and around all over the country, frankly. My only concern is that we did buy in 1999, it's almost like an English, if you will, an English colonial. And I say that because it has three dormers. It's a modular home. It's 2,011 square foot, full basement. I mean, it's huge. It's amazing. My question is, though, that the air exchanger doesn't work, and we have been trying to find a company that can come in and fix it. And I'm wondering, because back in the day, 1999 or maybe before, I'm not sure if that's the case now, you have to have ventilation because they used to be built, you know, so tightly. And we can't get anyone to fix it. This one particular home came from Canada, and I think a lot of them did back then. Is that still
Sure.
happening with
Sure, I'll ask our panel. Does anyone have a question for Kathleen? How does she find someone to fix her air exchanger?
That's a good question. We do our air exchange systems are fairly simple, relatively speaking, and we actually do the install ourselves. You know, that being said, I would we don't have a direct HVAC contractor, but I would suspect that most HVAC contractors could handle that. And if it's a ducted system where there's metal ducting throughout the house, and it may be a matter of just replacing the head unit, which should be accessible somewhere, but I don't have a great answer for you.
All right. Well, good luck to you, Kathleen. We're going to go now to Nancy Smith, who is CEO of Grow Smart Maine. Thanks for calling in, Nancy.
Good morning. This has been a really interesting and important conversation to be listening to.
You know, your organization is all about smart growth, and I know that you advocated for legislation that paves the way for towns in Maine to use more prefab housing. Tell us how certain kinds of building types can be pre-approved now.
Yes, thank you. This is one piece of our advocacy on housing policy, and it's a new law that establishes a state-level catalog of building types. And the goal is to reduce the cost and time associated with the building permit process in towns that choose to participate. So the catalog of building types will be at the state level, and it'll have single home, duplex, triplex, four unit, and even the residential above, retail below buildings that are common in our towns. And the designs need to fit Maine's architectural styles, include affordable options, and per conversation I heard earlier, they need to fit the building sites that are commonly found in Maine and include a broad public outreach process to give feedback on these designs so all of us can have help deciding which design ideas are going to be included in this catalog. And the cost and time savings is a meaningful benefit for the developer while also supporting the interests of the community. Now, the reason that it's relevant to this morning's conversation is the bill includes a requirement to seek input from UMaine's Advanced Structures and Composite Center with its 3D printer that you were talking about earlier. And again, its use of wood fiber materials, keeping things local as much as possible. You know, we're hearing this is a real asset in the building, of building housing across Maine. So including input from the 3D printer lab, I think, is going to be critical to making sure that how housing is built isn't a barrier to the kind of housing that can get this expedited permitting for towns that choose to engage.
All right. Well, thank you, Nancy, for calling in. Nancy Smith with Grow Smart Maine. So many other questions coming in. This is an email from Catherine. Can modular construction be used for an expansion to an existing stock-built home? Ryan, do you know the answer?
Yeah, absolutely it can. Obviously, there's some upfront evaluation that needs to happen, but we've done that in cases. I've actually even seen where we haven't personally done it, but where a second floor roof is removed from a house, and then there's some structural analysis. Well, before that, there'd be some structural analysis done, and then boxes are actually set on top of an existing. Obviously,
all right,
some investigating.
We'll go to Joanne from Naples. Hi, Joanne. Go ahead.
Hi, Jen. I was a little late getting in, so this may be already covered. My dad was a builder from Boston, built a cottage here in the Sebago Lake area, which I live in, and now it's getting close to 70 years old. It's developing problems that are really extensive. I was thinking of having it torn down and putting in a modular home. My concern is the type of insulation that's used. And looking ahead, how could I design it so it would be wheelchair accessible for access to the outside doors plus the bathroom? Also, I'd be interested in a cement foundation versus a slab. Having lived in San Diego for many years, I had a problem with the townhouse on a slab.
And Joanne, the home that you would be tearing down, is it on a foundation already?
It is, poured foundation. Actually, it was the first one in this area. They came from all around to see what the guy from Boston was doing.
Caroline, do you have thoughts about Joanne's questions?
I was going to punt that over to Ryan, actually.
Okay, go ahead, Ryan.
The foundation versus not situation that most people actually desire the foundation. There's extra space. There's some arguments why a slab on grade can be more challenging. We've done, I think the issue in those cases, a lot of the times, depending on setback and where that house is from the lake, if it's adjacent to the lake, if that's the way I heard it, you have to stay inside that very specific footprint of the existing house sometimes. So there's that, but all that can be evaluated, and we've done lakefront replacements.
And Chad, would this be where there's an existing foundation and a home being pulled down? Would this be something that would be appropriate for one of these cool homes built out of a shipping container or more than one shipping container?
Yes, we've done that a few different times, and one of the benefits we found of using a shipping container is a lot of times. And Ryan, you'll know this, the older foundations, the sizes are a lot smaller than what people want now. So with our shipping containers, we can overhang the foundation so they don't even have to do any more foundation work or site work to it. So we can put a larger home on it and overhang it and not have to do any foundation work to it. And an earlier question about doing an addition on a home, we did one on Peaks Island, and we've done a few others also that we put the shipping containers right up against the house and expanded the house like that.
All right. Well, thank you, Joanne, for your questions, and good luck to you. We'll go to Kate, who's calling from East Booth Bay. Hi, Kate. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. I just completed a 5,000-square-foot assembly of panel construction. I used Croft from Rockland, Maine, and the panels were 14 inches thick and had straw inside them. The actual construction took 12 days. 12 trucks came, and each day a truck was the crane took the panels and assembled them. So in 12 days, I had all of the walls and the roof completely assembled.
That sounds really exciting. Thank you so much, Kate, for calling and sharing that story. Another, here's an email from Hannah. About 8 or 9 years ago, we sold our old farmhouse and contracted for an 1,800 square foot modular home through a Maine dealer. It was built in 4 boxes in New Hampshire. Working with a builder, I designed the house to our needs, 2 bedrooms, 2 baths, a large office and studio, living room, kitchen, dining area, and added on a treat, a beautiful sunroom. It was so exciting to watch the entire process as we used land we already owned from the property we sold, which we split. Our heating system failed last winter when we were in Florida, but the house never went below 50 degrees. The insulation is incredible. One thing I'll say, we did not realize how much additional work needs to be done once the boxes are in place, so be prepared for that. But overall, it was a fantastic experience at a reasonable, not cheap price, and we couldn't be happier. So many points Hannah made there too, but I want to go to one of them, Caroline. We have said that modular homes can be less expensive, but they are not necessarily less expensive than stick-built homes, right?
That's right. You have to make some choices, and everything from what the footprint of the home is. Somebody was just talking about a 5,000 square foot home. That's very different than a 900 or 200 square foot tiny home. So the finish work, what you choose to put on the exterior of the house, we're using Maine materials, pine siding milled in Searsmont or LP SmartBoard. So interior finishes, so lots of ways that we're trying to be able to control the price point.
We have an email here from Bruce. I'm not going to read the whole thing because we're tight on time, but he's talking about that he has done both stick-built homes and now lives in a modular. And he says panelized construction is a great way to bring some jobs back to Maine that were once in modular home building spaces. And this whole idea of what this might do for the economy, Ryan, I'm just imagining that it's a lot easier for somebody who's working in construction to go to the same workspace every day instead of having to, like, you know, 1 week you're in one town, next month you're in another town. Just some real practical benefits for people who might be interested in working in construction.
Absolutely. We were joking around. I'm actually on a site today pouring a concrete slab outside, and I've been inside a manufacturing facility for the last 3 weeks, and we were all kind of caught off guard by how cold it was this morning, and it's raining right now. So we would be a lot more comfortable where we have been for the last 3 weeks. So that's one of the more substantial benefits, is not just from the level of comfort of employees, but I think it also, manufacturing said, it gives you an opportunity to kind of really see all the other things and maybe, you know, cross train and do some of the other things, not just stick to maybe one specific trade.
An email here from Mary. Are these new construction methods ones that can be accomplished for island communities? Chad, I'm going to go to you. I can only imagine the potential for shipping container buildings on island communities.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we discovered, is that the harder it is to get trades to a location, Ryan, you know how hard it is to get everybody out there and get set up on the morning stop, the more difficult the building location, or the higher cost labor in the area. Like Long Island, we've got homes out on Long Island that we delivered at $350 square foot, and we thought that was crazy expensive, but the ongoing cost were between $750 and $900 square foot, so it was a steal for them. So the islands, like Peaks Island, we got them on Peaks Island, Chabig Island, Swan's Island, we've got one of that. We've got another one in the factory right now going up to Swan's Island. So it helps keep the cost down when you're on the islands building.
I'm going to go to this email from Sana. Sana writes, this week is Building Science Week in Maine. Thursday, Caroline Pryor's Spec House in Searsport is hosting an event. And Friday, Go Logic's Belfast Shop has a free education happy hour event open to the public 3 to 6:30. So Caroline, we have just a few seconds. Tell us about what's going on at that Searsport house on Thursday.
Yes, tomorrow from 5 to 7, we have an open house as part of the Building Science Week. Everybody's welcome. We'll have a really short presentation at 6 on the return on investment of getting solar panels. So everyone is welcome. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you all. So many people interested in this topic, and you did such a great job. Caroline Pryor, president and founder of Zero Energy Homes. Ryan McCackern is owner of Maker Construction, and Chad Walton, CEO of Snap Space Solutions. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, what does it mean to leave a digital trail, and can it be deleted? I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.